Hello and welcome to another episode of Monster Dear Monster, a monster exploration podcast where we take a look at monsters from their folkloric origins to their current pop culture incarnations.
I'm your host for this episode, Cameron, and I'm joined by Leonard and Matt. Leonard, how are you doing?
I'm going to be lazy and just say busting makes me feel good.
Don't say it. Oh, it does. It does. Matt, how about you?
I'm happy we finally have a film where the older generation teaches children how much busting makes you feel good.
Yeah,
because it needs to be passed on. Kids will learn it eventually on their own if you don't teach them. So you want to make sure you set them on the right path.
Some on Twitter,
yeah.
Most on Instagram, unfortunately.
A lot of TikTok. A lot of people are busting on TikTok these days.
Yeah,
gotta watch out because that could be the Chinese
government
teaching you how
to bust. You need a manual
to
operate a trap properly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my God!
I resigned from the podcast. Thank you, Cameron. You finally got me.
Hey, no, hey, that's my line.
Oh man, yeah, it's been a hot minute, but we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire, hot off the presses a month ago. As a disclaimer, it has been a minimum of 2 weeks since each of us has seen this film, and we all saw it in varying stages of sobriety or awakenedness, so we'll do our best.
I watched it in what we like to call Vermont sober.
Mm.
Is that like Canadian tuxedo?
Where it's pretty, yeah, you know what? I was probably also wearing one of those at the time. So I do love my jean jacket.
Oh, man. Yeah. So this is a 2024 follow-up to the hit Ghostbusters Afterlife, which, you know, Ghostbusters has been more or less out of the limelight for, what, the better part of like 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
So it's nice to see it making a comeback.
36 years ago or something. Yeah.
Don't make me feel that old.
I know. Me too.
Oh, really? You too, Matt? You too? Did you see Ghostbusters 2 in theaters?
Probably. I remember getting it on VHS.
Okay, so you were a baby, not baby, like baby. A cognizant adult, like a cognizant child like me that was internalizing all of the nonsense that occurs.
My mom is dating and like had to bring the kids along. So yes, I watched a lot of movies in theaters.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah. So the kids that were ruining my movie going experience.
That's me.
When I was 8 years old.
That's absolutely me.
Landed in his little Roger Ebert get up. Sitting in the theater at 8 years old going, the movie going theater experience is ruined.
Dressed like the fucking boss baby with a little cane and a little hat.
Listen, given my proclivities, I would have been a little boss baby with a cane and a bowler. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You were a young gentleman of taste, as they say.
Right.
I mean, taste, I was class, a young gentleman.
Fine silk.
I don't know if I had
leather shoes.
Well, there's no accounting for it. But yeah, Ghostbusters has been sort of making a kickback the last few years, which has been nostalgically nice, even if I hadn't directly engaged with any of it until this point. But I didn't watch Afterlife when it came out. I watched it before I went to go see this film.
Hey, Cameron, you did more work than I did, because I still haven't seen Afterlife.
Same here, man. Did not see Afterlife. Yeah.
It's not bad. It's definitely for a younger audience than Frozen Empire.
I was told. It was kind of like a kid's Ghostbusters, so I kind of just didn't engage.
No, that's fair. I didn't mind it. I enjoyed my time watching it, but as I said, backstage, mostly because we got partway through the movie and I went, is that Shorok Dashlu? When a certain character's voice came out, like, point at the screen and we had to check out IMDb. I'm like, of course it is. Her voice is unmistakable.
Podcast favorite.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it was honestly pretty good. It was definitely a more of a kid's film, but they're doing the thing they do these days, which is they catch the kids' audience and then they age the movies up as they continue along. So this is more of a teen's Ghostbusters.
Right.
Which makes it much more palatable generally. And right. I will say off the top, I quite enjoyed this as an in theater experience. It was pretty fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a really, hey, guess what? Hey, podcast audience, I know I've said multiple times, but I am an old man. I'm an old boomer bitch. I remember watching the real Ghostbusters animated TV show, and this is just a movie-length live-action version of an episode of the real Ghostbusters.
It really was. It was kind of Monster of the Week. It had that feeling. There was like a set solution to get rid of it. It was exactly that feeling.
It was a lot of fun. It is still leaning pretty heavily on nostalgia as like a key thing to get people into it who aren't already in from the previous movies. Like, you know, like the gang's all here. Bill Murray shows up. Everyone who's alive shows up, which is like,
stop my heart. That was
a little rough.
I mean, shows up is also so
hard. I'm like Harold Ramis was alive when I was born, and now he doesn't exist anymore. Other than the CGI ghost in a movie that I haven't watched.
There was a lot of CGI Egon Spengler in Afterlife.
Shows up for Bill Murray is, I did 3 ADR lines and had them sync it to me while I was just kind of tooting around set one afternoon. And that was Bill Murray showing up. Is all right. Yeah.
I kind of love the Kaufman-esque performance artist that Bill Murray has become, where he's like, oh really, you want to pay me to be in your movie even though you've seen all my performances and know what an asshole I am, and you still want me to be in your movie? Sure.
I'll bumble around for a couple days.
I'll get drunk on set. Let's do it.
You should know better at this point, but you still come calling, so I'm just like, I'm Garfield.
Yeah. Look, I will say, every movie he appears in, he gets closer and closer to how he looked in Zombieland. Eventually he's going to, like, shamble on set and they'll have to actually check for a pulse, but he's still working.
At least the pterodactyl ghost didn't grab him by the shoulders and kill him by throwing him out a window in this movie.
There's that. Yeah, yeah. Like, as a basic recap, Afterlife was Egon Spengler dies in a ghost-related incident, and his estranged family get kicked out of their rental, so they have nothing to do but go to his home in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, and deal with ghosts there while they try to live their life.
I'm sorry. Ghost-related incident is sending me. It's the kind of energy that I've kind of been craving for my entire life. That That's what I want in my obituary. Leonard Johnson died due to a ghost-related incident.
It sounds like officer-involved shooting. Like, you did the ghost kill him? Or, like, why are we being so passive with this?
Yeah, the ghost did kill him, but he provoked the ghost. It's different.
Oh, all right, yeah. Was he one of those, you know, ghost provokers? You know,
yeah.
One of those liberal ghost provokers?
Afterlife is just a recreation of Ghostbusters 1, so he had one of the gatekeeper dogs trapped in a trap and provoked the other one to come get him.
Yep.
Messed that one up real bad.
That's what I would do as old Egon, the smartest Ghostbusters of the Ghostbusters.
I mean, he was eventually proved right over the course of the film, but yeah. Shenanigans. Gozer comes back as Shorag Dashlu, which, hey, excellent. Why not?
Yeah.
The Stay Puft Marshmallow Men abound, but now they're all Little Puffs. Now they're a franchise cute little mascot instead of a big kaiju mascot.
Yeah, you gotta get your Baby Yoda, your...
I will appreciate how horrific they made the little Stay Puffs, because they are... the cute little minions, if they had no sense of self-preservation.
Yeah,
at the end of this film, when they steal a truck and one of them sears its own face off with a cigarette lighter,
yeah,
is the last image you see in this film, and it's horrific.
Yeah.
I was just like sitting there in the theater, and I looked at my friend who I went to this with, and I'm like, why did they end with that? That's like such a terrifying little bummer. What is that?
Nobody's happy about it. He's got his smiley face stamped into the cigarette lighter. They love it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know why that's there? For old people like me to be like, oh my god, they stole a truck that's so old, it has a cigarette lighter.
True. Yeah.
Lighter in it. Oh, this is a great bit. This reminds me of my time.
Man.
R.I.P. my last truck. Last thing I ever owned that had one of those cigarette lighters.
My one complaint is that my car could have a cigarette lighter, but the default is a USB charger that you have to pull out to place a cigarette lighter in.
Oh, boo.
I don't even smoke. I just want it to be in the car.
This is where after the podcast you tell me the make and model of your car and I buy you a cigarette lighter.
I'll get one eventually.
Australia's on fire enough. He can just lean out the window and light something. Yeah, he'll be fine.
That is 90% of our fire problems is someone flicking a half done cigarette out of the car, to be fair. We don't need any more of that. All the shenanigans can shoot, and then you know they're real Ghostbusters because the real Ghostbusters showed up to help. And they get inducted in, they know what they're doing, and then that leads us on the way to this film. So 3 years later, they've moved out of absolutely nowhere. No, sorry, not Ohio. It's Oklahoma. Somerville, Oklahoma. How could I mistake these two great states?
Even though you're an Australian, I also don't know the difference between Ohio and Oklahoma. So.
Yeah, fair. They've moved to the big city. Because now we're doing Ghostbusters 2.
Right. Well, it's the Big Apple, not the big city. The biggest city. The biggest city that's ever been, according to New Yorkers.
I've seen the Big Pineapple. Is that any different? Or
it's more honest than the Big Apple.
I mean, that's fair.
Just because you live in Mega City 1 doesn't mean that every other city is like the small city now, Leonard. 2000 AD hellscape that is California.
Yes.
It's just one strip mall that goes on for the entire length of the coast.
I mean, listen, listeners, you've heard me for years, possibly, or hearing me now, and you know that if I lived in a nightmarish hellscape, I would totally still be surviving being a child that was born here in 1982.
They moved to the Big Apple. as it is. They go to New York because, yeah, we're doing Ghostbusters 2. It's time to get things rolling.
Right.
We've done Ghostbusters 1. Now we're going to do Ghostbusters 3, 2. Who knows what we're doing next? So it is.
What if they did the lady Ghostbusters again? That'd be great.
I mean, they've got enough female characters.
Actually, like, after setting this up, yeah.
Why not?
Do it again. Don't put Chris Hemsworth in it. Not because he wasn't great. He wasn't the only good thing about that movie, but because it'd be weird if all these 18-year-olds were hitting on Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, no, that would be extremely unusual. Yeah. Put Timothy Chalamet in.
There you go. Yeah.
Then it turns out that he's Pinocchio at the...
Oh, no, that's good, though. Oh, no. Copyright. Copyright 2024, Leonard Johnson.
Umbernox Productions. OC do not steal.
This is the third act.
Timothy Chalamet as your original character, but all right, man.
The third act twist is Timothy Chalamet's head spins 180 degrees around. It's like, I've always been one of them. I've just been stuck puppeting this body.
And then Jeff Keighley comes out and he's like, here's the Game of the Year award.
Presented by Hideo Kojima. Yes. No. So the Spengler family, which is Callie Spengler, her two kids, Trevor and Phoebe. Trevor, famously from Stranger Things. I can never see him as anything else. Finn Wolfhard?
Yes. He was also... Listen, Cameron, he was also... voice of Candlewick in Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. So
look, that's great. I didn't see his enormous nose.
He's just like little Adam Driver.
I was in Pinocchio, but not in Pinocchio, because that would have been unpleasant.
Yeah. Carrie Coon is Callie Spengler, who's Egon's daughter. McKenna Grace is Phoebe Spengler. And then everyone's favorite character is Paul Rudd as boyfriend of the family, Gary Gruberson.
So I unironically really love Paul Rudd and love when Paul Rudd is on screen.
Yeah.
Mainly due to the Conan running gag of him constantly showing that clip of Mac and Me where the kip goes off the cliff. Yep. So like Paul Rudd, unless he's outed as like the most monstrous person in the universe. Yeah. Will always be one of my favorite people to see in any piece of media.
I mean, that's fair. He's pretty fun.
His character name is like very first draft. We'll fill this in with something better later, right?
Yeah.
Gary Gruberson.
And I bet they asked Paul Rudd what his character name should be because they couldn't figure one out. And he looked at it and he was like, Gary Gruberson is a really dumb, stupid name. That is the name that I want to be.
Dan Aykroyd was way too busy doing coke off of a bottle of Crystal Skull vodka. Yeah, I'd be like, yeah no, that's great. Gary Gruberson, let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, look, the previous film was for like the 9 to 12 range, which Gary Gruberson hits with those kids, I'm sure.
Hell yeah.
And now that they're aiming older, it's too late to change it unless he became Gary Spengler by marrying into the family.
He will be Gary Spengler in the next movie. Oh, man, it's going to revolve around the wedding and the...
Yeah. Oh, they're going to do Hearts of Stone?
I mean, is totally obsessed with breaking up marriages because that's how the Demon Ghost will conquer the world.
Yes. Yeah, fair. They've all moved to New York, along with firm friends from the previous film, Lucky Domingo, who is just a nice girl, a little older than Trevor, and Podcast, a kid who, when I saw him in Afterlife, I went, why is he here? Surely some other kid would have killed him in rural Oklahoma at this point.
I mean, because he's the comic relief.
So, yeah. So I didn't know that was this kid's name until I'm looking at this Wikipedia page. I've just been calling him Ace Ventura Jr. this entire time.
I mean, Ace Ventura Jr. is a good fit.
It's what he's been.
I really like
the hair,
yeah.
The outfit is just, I don't understand why he's in this movie.
His introduction in the previous film was shoving a microphone in Phoebe's face going, tell me about your move here. By the way, my name is Podcast. And I'm like, this kid,
boomer writing children. Yeah, it's such a What a move. Nobody said no to that. So many yeses had to happen before they put a child named Podcast into a film that dresses like a pervert from an 80s movie. I just...
Very specifically, I believe that is not his real name, but they never mention his real name in either of the films.
Oh, he's a Tulpa. Great. Perfect. Wonderful.
A kid named Podcast, yeah.
So given that this script was only written by two people, I'm going to assume that Jason Reitman was not the one that named him Podcast.
Probably not.
I'm going to put that on Gil Kenan.
Exactly.
But yeah, they've relocated to New York City because Winston Zeddemore, one of the better Ghostbusters, let's be honest, has been massively successful in his life, but wants to start the busting business back up. Which I love. I love that Winston gets the best ending out of any of the Ghostbusters. Like, Egon went crazy and died on a farm in rural Oklahoma. Ray is running this tiny little antique shop and a podcast on the side. And, you know, Bill Murray.
Yeah, Bill Murray's just being a weird pervert somewhere. Yeah. But like Ernie Hudson, in the first movie got like such short shrift. He was like the 9-to-5er. He's just like, I'm just doing this for the paycheck. Yeah. I don't give a shit about any of this stuff. And then in this movie, it's the exact opposite. It's like, I'm the most passionate about this. And I'm the most successful at it. It's like, wait, what the fuck happened?
he built his technology empire on the back of everything Egon built for the team.
Yeah.
Oh God. The bad end for the next Ghostbusters movie. They pull what was the Pacific Rim sequel, Uprising? And then they make Ernie Hudson the Charlie Day of that one. He's actually been possessed by a ghost this entire time.
Vigo's back, and this time he's doing
blackface.
He's possessed
by a Rockefeller, and that's why he's successful. It's perfect.
And then there's a big Christmas tree ghost at the end of the movie. Actually, a big Christmas tree ghost sounds real good, though.
Yeah.
You know, the city mayor saying, maybe we should let the Rockefeller ghost stay around because the sewers are running with pure refined oil. None of that psychoclastic goo from the Vigo Institute.
He built another music hall. Like, people are loving this shit.
The orphans are rejoicing.
Honestly, considering that the mayor is Walter Peck, that is accurate writing.
They have a ghost incident in Hell's Kitchen and catch a ghost while doing innumerable amounts of property damage. And then Walter Peck shows up, is like, hey, wasn't this guy like the city health inspector? So I was like, well, he's the mayor now somehow. Really brushed over that I nearly destroyed the entire city by opening a container full of ghosts incident. And I mean, turned that into a successful career.
They buried that. That was swamp gas. That was whatever those gross blobs of like waste and fat.
That is sort of a plot point in the previous film where no one seems to know about ghosts anymore, despite there being video footage of Lady Liberty walking the streets. And it's just like, you know, it was crazy back in the 80s. Weird shit happened all the time. That shit doesn't happen anymore. And no one thinks to go, why doesn't that happen anymore? Maybe it's because they busted all the ghosts.
Honestly, yeah, it really isn't. Ever since Giuliani like really cleaned up Times Square, you don't see shit like that anymore.
The previous film is like they busted all the ghosts, but then the ghosts were all trapped somewhere, and the film ended with all the ghosts getting out. So ghostbusting is a business again. But I'm just like, how did you forget as a culture about that period where the Titanic showed up in New York?
How do you forget as a culture about that time that woman's mink stole made up ran down the street?
That was like a formative horror moment for me.
How do you forget as a culture
that screaming?
How do you forget as a culture that there was a blowjob ghost just out there in the
yeah, for like a whole month, everyone in New York City slept better.
Like the Dear Penthouse section was just backed up with letters for years after that shit. I never believed it would happen to me.
I mean, it was the basis of the Red Shoe Diaries, I think, honestly.
Yeah. So, you know, they're catching a lot of flack because you fired the proton beam directly into, like, a million buildings. And this is only exacerbated when they go, you put a 15-year-old child out the side of a moving vehicle in, like, a little gunner seat.
Yeah, because it was cool. It was sick.
It's like, she's working for your eyes. She's like, they're not paying me. It's like, oh, it's child labor.
when Walter Peck was doing his whole spiel, I was actually Bill Murray. And I'm like, this man has no dick.
You know, he's doing his usual bureaucratic asshole move. But yes, he's also making some decent points. I was
hoping that they would have upgraded the Ecto-1 to have like a Halo-style like warthog gun. Oh, turret.
The warthog gun, yeah.
Yeah, just like just a big, some sort of linear rail cannon on the back or something.
But the best thing I can do is a drone deployed trap. Yeah.
And you need a ghost big enough, which is what will happen.
Mm-hmm. There was a Leviathan. Like they were opening scene. It was a Marian water god flying around.
It was one of Ursula's lackeys, just ghost lackeys just
coming in. Roll up there. All right, sure.
And, you know, to sort of get the heat off, Callie goes, you know what? That's fair. The miner will no longer participate in ghost busting.
Right. because she is, like, one of the things that I like about this movie is that she is setting herself up as the Egon. If Egon was the problem in a previous Ghostbusters movie, he would be like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to be a Ghostbuster anymore.
Mm. Yeah. Phoebe is very much fulfilling the Egon role because she's literally her grandfather.
Yes.
more or less. Same sort of general look, you know, glasses, that kind of slightly nerdy dude. Same innate ability to just understand nuclear reaction technology.
Oh, we're going to have a conversation about the properties of brass when we get to it.
Oh, boy. Excellent. I'm glad we got a metallurgist on for this one.
Yeah, the part that I was also very excited to hear Matt talk about because metallurgy.
You want to hear a man yell in a movie theater? This is how you get it.
Oh, man. To soothe her feelings, Phoebe goes to a park to partake in the traditional New York pastime of fooling people at chess.
Yes.
Because of the previous film, she's going to do what she always does, which is try and play ghost chess with her grandfather. But she gets the wrong number. Different ghost shows up.
The wrong one in, yeah.
If the movie had turned into Talk to Me at this point via chess.
Oh, man. That'd be real good.
Well, nah, his character name was Melody, right?
Melody, yes.
Yes.
The Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Melody.
Yeah. It's like, I died in a horrible fire. Wow, why aren't you all burned up? I died before the flames reached my face. So I'm like, okay.
Which is usually what happens. You die of asphyxiation.
She just should have been, like, really pointed and sarcastic and been, like, smoke inhalation.
Oh man,
Silent killer. Carbon monoxide.
Exactly. Oh man, and you know, Melody's stuck on this side because she can't complete her business. She's got a real matchbook with like a single match in it that she just is always futzing around with, which is presumably like her anchor to the reality or whatever. But you know, she's just stuck
Cameron.
Being a ghost. Yeah.
Hey, Cameron, Matt, you know what this means? It means that the Ghostbusters universe also shares rules from the ghost universe.
Yeah, it does. Now, what's Slimer's anchor item?
Food.
just food in general.
Just food, as long as
a scrap of produced food exists, he can never leave.
Honestly, if like it comes out in a later film that Slimer is like the avatar of gluttony, that would be one of the best turns
ever. That would be pretty cool. Just like as we get further and further into late stage consumer capitalism, Slimer just gets bigger and bigger.
Yes, like an episode of The Real Ghostbusters. Where that
as Christmas approaches, we're seeing a week-by-week increase in the size of Slimer.
Yeah. You're joking, but that was kind of the episode of that.
Meanwhile, barely relatedly, Ray is running his little freaky antiques shop, and they're doing Antiques Roadshow, but cursed, with podcast, which they're filming this and putting it on YouTube. So someone brings a supposedly possessed or cursed or haunted object, and they point the little spectrometer at it. And it's like, I'm sorry, the watch that your husband's old watch that occasionally beeps when you look at it is not possessed. You know, it's just running out of batteries. He's already moved on, and so should you. And then the kid hits the watch with the hammer because that gets the views. It's so stupid.
What is their relationship, Ray and podcast?
They just work together. Like, podcast is living in his basement.
Does he have parents?
Says a lot about rent.
Like,
I believe he has parents in the first film. Yeah, they never show up.
In this movie that I don't have like history on because I didn't see the afterlife. There's podcasts.
Yeah.
There is the black girl. I forget what her name is. And then there's the Hitler youth looking kid. And they don't do a ton.
Wait, which one is the Hitler youth?
Very like
kid?
The blonde hair, blue eyed. I'm the smart one here. I'm doing the experiment.
James Acaster.
Sure, I don't know.
Yeah, he has no background because he's
great.
New to
cool.
This film.
He doesn't need to be in this movie. He just looks like the real Ghostbusters analog Egon character, kind of. Blonde haired one.
Yeah. Podcast was a kid at school with Phoebe who was the only person who wanted to make friends with her, and so I guess they had just joined at the hip now. Sure. Lucky was the first girl that Trevor laid eyes on in this new town at a skate-themed burger restaurant. Mm. And so they're obviously best friends and nothing else. And then, the character played by James Acaster later, the scientist guy, is just a guy who works for Winston.
Okay, great. Asked and answered.
Yeah. Dr. Lars Pinfield, apparently he has a doctorate. Okay.
All right. I thought he was like 19.
Not a teenager, just sure. Very young-looking British. Yeah.
All right.
How old is James Acaster?
Everyone playing teens in this is in their 20s, right? Except for Finn Wolfhard.
Well, of
James
course.
Acaster is 39 years old.
And I mean, Matt, of course, everyone who because we've reverted to 90210 rules where only 45-year-olds can play teens.
Who look like leather Muppets, yeah.
Finn Wolfhard is 21 years old.
Yeah, of course he is.
I bet he's a messy Jesus drunk. Christ. I bet he can drink. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just skinny guys like that. It's not a good hang, man.
Yeah,
you get like two beers in them, and then it's just like, all right, where are your shoes? I don't want to be your dad.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to start. Oh,
Leonard, that's why we call you podcast.
Oh no.
Let's try that one again, Leonard. Whenever you're ready, man.
Dave, keep this in.
Sorry, should it be more clear?
So yeah, Stan and podcast. More importantly, Stan is kind of interesting because he's adopted a lot of Venkman in his old age. If you know what I mean, Cameron, where he's like he was like so like kind and sympathetic in the previous films, and now that he's older and more skeptical, like, oh man, this watch is haunted, and he's like, listen, I used to be a Ghostbuster. I can tell if something's haunted. This isn't haunted, and now I'm gonna smash it with a mallet.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of edge in his old age.
Yeah, because it's just like, now you don't get to take this to anywhere else and tell them that this is haunted.
The exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even not like there, that's part of it, but just like, just so you don't like ghosts are real. Don't pick up fake ghosts.
You're like, gonna interfere with my line of work if you keep telling people there are ghosts around where there aren't.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, his little antiquity store also doubles as a pawn shop. So who else but Kumail Nanjiani comes striding in with a cardboard box?
That's part of this movie, Kumail. Easily.
It was honestly pretty fun.
He was having fun in this movie, and you can really tell.
Oh, yeah.
Which is funny that Ant-Man and what's his character from Congo? God, what the hell is his Eternals name?
Something like that. I didn't watch Eternals, so I can't help you.
He has such a very funny... Kingo!
It's
Ant-Man and Kingo are in this movie together. It's great. What a reunion.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
And no kiss, so it sucks.
Fair. This is Nadim Rizmadi, and he's come with a box full of his late grandmother's stuff, which, you know, he couldn't bear to part with for less than, like, $20. It's a bunch of esoteric things, little trinkets and knickknacks, and then there is the orb. Sort of finely engraved brass orb that is like horrendously intricate looking.
Is this very heavy background on brass being like a powerful religious artifact that goes back to
the days of Sumeria
or whatever.
Chomping at the bit to get into the history of brass. I'm very excited. No, listen, we'll edge the audience just as we'll be edged about the history of brass. But I love that it's just like, oh yeah, Here's a TV guide from 1976. Here's a Lovecraft orb. Can you see the fine Lovecraftian detailing on this giant Lovecraft
this big typewriter orb. Ball I brought in?
Let me just point the PKE reader at it, and there it goes. It's damaged your entire bench and sent out a weird little frost pulse.
Yep.
It's probably worth like $50.
Honestly, if there was a postmodernist Pokemon series where it's like after the great flood that has destroyed the entire world, and someone is like, my great grandmother had this orb, and it's just a Pokeball. That's
what this functionally is. This is likely to be an apotropaic trap, i.e. a ghost trap, but we didn't have a toaster to build it out of.
Right. Yep.
This psionic pulse also cracks the basement wall in the Ghostbusters headquarters where the containment unit is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, ghost stuff, very bad.
I need to talk about the containment unit a little bit.
Right
now, as a child that grew up with the real Ghostbusters, there's a fucking pocket dimension in the containment unit where all the ghosts that they have trapped exist. It's a nightmare realm, and they never, like, I mean,
They built the Shadow Realm. And then they put everyone's dead grandma in it.
But the amount of non-play that the containment unit gets in like the films is baffling, because like like Quantumania, the next Ghostbusters movie where they get sucked into the containment unit.
Oh yeah.
Have multiple times in the cartoon show.
Yeah. It's gonna be like Ancient Sumeria in there, but
they're building like the even bigger one over at like wherever Winston's headquarters are.
Yeah, Winston's place. That's the thing. Is they talk about the containment unit, and part of you goes, "That seems kind of messed up because it's just a giant electric ghost fence generator."
Yes,
within a quantum pocket realm or whatever. Yeah. And like, A, how did that exist?
Egon.
B, has this existed for 30 years with zero maintenance?
Egon.
And C, why are we building a bigger, more torturous version with multiple chambers?
And what did this world do before this existed? Like, have there just been, like...
They got haunted.
Oh, all right.
They got haunted. If you're extremely lucky, you had a brass pokeball, which solved exactly one...
One ghost issue. It was a big one, but they solved it. You know, but I guess before that, we just got like 9/11 scale, or like even worse than that, like tsunami, Japanese tsunami scale disasters just happening all the time.
Yeah.
No, they were just like, man, Arakuno keeps freezing everything. Gotta put this one. Freezes everything and makes everyone feel bad because everything's frozen.
Yeah. I mean, like, some of the backstory we got here seems like ghosts were more integrated into everyday society because it's like, oh, it's no big sweat. This Babylonian king had a ghost for a general, but you know,
he was fine.
You know, we limited his power a bit.
And now they're all in ghost gulags. It's not great. It's not great. Yeah.
It's really not great down there. Eventually, they hand this orb off to Winston because he's got a private research center that is building the super ghost prison, which is when our aforementioned Hitler Youth, Dr. Lars Pinfield, shows up. They've created a box that physically pulls ghosts out of objects and then sends them to the ghost gulag.
Yeah.
It's got a very fine level of control. We find out later you can choose not to send them to ghost gulag and have them out of the object for an exact time.
So you can tease them or something? I don't really know what the point of that is.
You can tease them a little.
No, so you can interrogate them. You gotta interrogate them.
Where are your friends? How many of there are you?
The ghost gulag.
Exactly. Where are the ghost drugs?
Name, rank, and serial number.
But they find that this doesn't work very well on this orb.
Yeah.
Mysteriously enough. Lars teams up with Trevor and Lucky. Lucky has been working at this research center as well. And they go visit Nadim, who is very reluctant until they say, "We don't want a refund for the ghost orb you sold us."
His character of, like, everything is for sale around me, but I'm going to play, like, a coquettish card to get for just, like, a second. For like a single, he's like, "Nah, I couldn't." They're like, "You know, we don't want to return it." He's like, "I got plenty more for sale. Come on in." It's a very funny kind of shithead character that.
You want some Jordans? You're a size 7. It's like, no, I'm a 10.
You're growing to these, no problem.
He revealed that he got the orb from his grandmother's hidden apartment chamber. And reveals what looks like some sort of desensitization chamber for ghosts.
Which they immediately say sex dungeon. The sex dungeon joke part immediately.
Yeah. Yep. And this is the point where I went, oh, they have aged up the film for the audience because they couldn't say the word sex.
Right.
Then they have a whole 5-minute, man, your grandma had a sex dungeon with chains and whips and reflective walls.
And crazy eyes wide shut masks.
But yeah, it has a palantir stand for the orb to sit in, but it's like a grasping claw rising up from the floor.
I mean, of course it is, and I was totally down with it. I'm just like, you know what?
Awesome.
After you've made this sex dungeon joke, the fact that this is the centerpiece of the room is actually very fitting.
The grasping
as
hand
an adult.
Reaching up.
If I entered a secret room. that had an orb on a plinth in the center of it, I'd be like, that's not none of my business. I don't need to be in here. I'm just, you know what?
I ain't touching that.
What was the reason he was in there? He wanted like Pop-Tarts or something. He just accidentally opened this.
He was looking for Pop-Tarts and found a secret room. Yeah, yeah.
As an adult of the 21st century, I would absolutely do the RIP Bozo over the grave sign me.
Oh, man.
With the orb and the plinth and never see it again.
That's fair. This room has several interesting features, such as a full suit of, like, scale mail done fully in brass with, like, a veiled
hood and stuff. Yeah, the chain mask is really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's very cool. A big rack of horns just stuck to the wall. Just, like, the weirdest, curliest, twistiest goat horns you've ever seen. And, you know, some books, some other stuff, but it's all plated in brass. And I think this is where we bring up brass as a psychokinetic.
Yeah, it's like a dampening field or metal, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They really liked writing that into the film. This is from, this would all be copper, you guys. There's no way this would be fucking brass. They're not alloying then. Very funny. That they're really, really, really focused on brass to the point where, like, it got my attention.
Matt?
Yeah.
But here's the problem. Because this is the universe where ghosts actually exist, ghosts taught humans how to make brass earlier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, you know this universe has a great ghost-based explanation for the series of unfortunate events suffered by Alfred Sax, creator of the greatest brass instrument known to man, the saxophone. They were trying to get him before he created an anti-ghost weapon.
The saxophone. Yes. Saxophone. Right.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, Sax created it, but Sousa perfected it with the sousaphone.
I mean, yes. But people should... Hey, just as an aside, look into the life of Alfred Sax. God was trying to kill absolutely. That man before he invented
insane.
Saxophone.
God hated jazz. He still hates jazz.
He drank a cup of acid thinking it was a cup of tea at 12 years old.
He almost died so many times. So many times.
And then he died penniless and alone because he invented the saxophone before we invented jazz. And so no one could appreciate it.
I made an instrument what sounds like a screaming animal. How come nobody wants this thing?
Here's the thing. Here's the smart play. You make that a central feature of the next Ghostbusters movie.
That would be good.
And then the summoner of the apocalypse is a possessed Kenny G.
Who's the guy? Who's the guy from Trigun? Mid Valley, the Horn Freak. That's who we get. Absolutely, saxophone based magic. I need it. It's gonna be so good.
Yeah. But yeah, with all this weird stuff going on, and the oblivious nature in which Nadim found this room, they begin to suspect he may be possessed. So they take him back for further testing, and they just get Venkman in to this. So we get Bill Murray doing the world's most annoying and blasé interrogation of a man we've ever seen.
And it's really good.
Point they find, it's very fun because it starts as a normal interview. And then they notice that he's a pyrokinetic. Yeah. So he just asks more annoying and more personally invasive questions.
Hey, well, they're like...
and starts getting mad.
But it makes him paranoid that they're not benign. And I don't know, Bill Murray and Kumail working together, they're just two guys who are very good at, like, improvising. And just, it was a very, very well done. It's probably the best scene in the film. These two just going back and forth. I was laughing a lot at this. This is pretty good.
It feels like they humanized that scene where they put the goo in the toaster and made it dance. But it's, you know, you're prodding Kumail Nanjiani to make the fire rise.
And it's like harkening right back to like him being, you know, a fake psychic analyst with like the cards, where he would just say the girl got him right so he could like hit on her later, and the guy who was getting them right 100% of the time just kept saying no.
So you also call back to that at the end of this film, I think.
But very good stuff. Yeah. Very good stuff here.
Meanwhile, Ray, Phoebe, and Podcast go to the New York Public Library to find out more about Orb.
Orb. Gotta go back to the library. We gotta do it.
We gotta get library ghosts again.
It's definitely a different actress because she is probably long dead.
Oh, yes. Because that old woman is definitely...
They got her actual ghost.
That was a nice callback. Oh man.
If they had been like, if they had just done a bunch of really high-end CG to recreate her and just been like, we actually captured the ghost.
It was cheaper than the AI generation to do this. So yeah, we just got a real ghost.
Yeah. Look, all I'm saying is that in the Ghostbusters universe, they're not going to get AI generation. They're literally going to get ghosts in. Yes. And then we'll have the whole union talks, but it's about you can't receive a paycheck.
Who needs a ghostwriter when
so
you have
paycheck a paycheck has to go to your next of kin.
Can you imagine the Ghostbusters as like movie studio streaming hitman, like capturing like Humphrey Bogart ghost, Clint Eastwood ghost?
Please just let me pass on. So I don't want to go to Casablanca 4.
We got to do another comedy special. Get Chris Farley in the trap.
No one gets to use their likeness, and because they captured the ghost.
Look, you don't want to fuck with the mouse. He's going to hold on to your soul for 2,000 years till the copyright expires.
Nobody takes Disney to court because they have to deal with the floating head of Walt Disney.
Yeah.
And the Scolari brothers.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Researching in the New York Public Library, they find out through Dr. Hubert Vatsky that the orb was built by a quartet of sorcerers called Firemasters, because we're just throwing
it's
words
such a noun out. And it's such a like, why couldn't you think of something that was like, I don't know, where's this guy from? It doesn't really say the country of origin for this, but it would have been great to get a local term. Like,
it'd be like,
sure, right, why not?
Even Flame Masters
it just sounds, it's so first draft. Firemaster. It's just
Because they wanted to say Firebender.
Yeah, true. I mean, it does feel like a thing from an 80s movie. The Firemaster just feels like an 80s thing.
And... yeah, but it doesn't have the ring of Keymaster to it. We've already got a master in this.
Yeah,
in this
seriously.
Universe, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah. Anyway, they threw Garaka, a demonic god of cold and negative energy, into an orb.
Sure. We're just getting all the nouns out now. Let's just do it. It's
so surprise listeners who haven't watched this movie. Our villain is Mr. Freeze from Batman Robin.
Yeah. Literally.
That's it. Just saying. So if you've seen Batman and Robin, you know his modus operandi for this movie.
Yeah.
It's cold and negative emotions.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. It turns out that Nadim's grandmother extremely long lived because she was an adult in 1904 and a gentleman's club known as the Manhattan Adventurous Society stole this orb from the keepers and got her to try to open it for them. And she was the only survivor when he partially escaped and froze everyone else in the room to death, because she was a Firemaster, of course. And, you know, the orb works because he's vulnerable to copper alloys and fire, and brass is a copper alloy that you make from fire. And also, the ancient king who employed him snapped his horns off to reduce his power. At this point, so back in the research lab, they had a ton of ghosts not in the containment zone, but like in zoo exhibits.
Mm-hmm.
And we focused on one in particular, which was the Possessor, which is just a little red bolt of light that just takes over any physical object. It's a very tricksy little thing. It escaped partway through the film and has been sort of riding along with the characters ever since. At this point, they find that there's an audio recording of the club's ritual, including a ritual chant used to open the orb. This little guy jumps right into that and starts running off with it.
Right. Oh, yeah. We're kind of passing over the Patton Oswalt scene, which I don't know. He's also like a also-ran in this movie. His scene was okay. He's just playing the character he's just playing Patton Oswalt, a dude who could filibuster about nerd shit for hours on end. And then shows them this rare wax cylinder that immediately gets stolen and they have to go chasing after. And then he just disappears. And I was like, why isn't he a Ghostbuster? Like, him and Kumail, like, should be yucking it up and being in the new crew or something. Yeah. But he's just gone. It's just really weird to have him.
That's for the third movie, Matt.
I guess.
When there are two Ghostbusters crews. That one run by Ernie and the one
the A team and the B team, yeah,
the Spanglers, yep. And then they have to. There's a duo antagonist that is actually the same antagonist that both are fighting and running wrestling.
By the time that movie comes out, the entire original crew is going to be CG ghosts. Except
for Annie Potts,
he's going to live forever. And it's just, I don't know, it's just, they're just going to get more and more depressing the more these come out, you guys.
I mean, honestly, if we're going to be honest, Ernie and Annie are probably going to be the last ones able to actually be living individuals in these films. And I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah. I mean, God, Ernie Hudson is like 76 or something. Man, he looks fantastic. 78.
Yeah.
78. He looks incredible.
Wild. Yeah.
He looks like maybe a mid-40s.
Yep.
God. Yeah. So Phoebe, Ray, and Podcast chase this little possessor ghost out of the library because it's carrying important information, whereupon it instead possesses one of the lion statues at the front of the New York Public Library.
Yep.
Because, hey, I love a good gargoyle-style big statue come to life and fight you scene. At which point Phoebe blows it up with a proton pack.
Fuck you, public art.
Destroying public art. Yeah. We love it. But this is sort of the final straw because, you know, Walter Peck already went, you know, if you get the kid out and make sure you don't do damage, you can continue running, I guess. And then the kid is not only actively investigating this, but blew up a piece of public art.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, we're shutting the Ghostbusters down. I've wanted to do this for my entire life.
So Matt mentioned this earlier. They actually do a really good job of giving Walter Peck some like actual legitimate points.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which is like Walter Peck's like not a non-believer in ghosts anymore. He lived through Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. But he's just like, hey, don't fuck up the city. Like,
yeah,
I know ghosts are a thing, but don't fuck up the city.
You're really just like shooting your guns into the air everywhere. You're really, you can't be doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Don't do that. Obviously, Phoebe's not happy about this. Her mother and Gary Gruberson are also not happy about this. And after she has a bit of an argument with them, she runs away from home to meet the only person who really gets her, romantic undertone that we won't say out loud because, you know, not allowed to mention anything queer.
No.
No. Gay, lesbian, ghost girlfriend.
My dead ghost girlfriend from the 1920s or whatever.
Who has like a completely modern aesthetic, but
Spangler child.
Yeah. I don't know. 20s might not be right. Definitely not 2020s. But, you know, she's like, you're the only person who gets me, but we can't be together. But I know a way. Takes her to the research center and she puts herself in the ghost extraction box.
Yep.
because she's going to rip her soul out of her body so she can have some interaction with someone. It's some Romeo and Juliet about.
Shit, right? Totally here. Helped. I'm going to die because you're dead.
It really so is.
Hang out and be dead.
And I mean, she put like a 2 minute timer fair. On.
And, well, yeah, she did do it like I'm putting my. She's what is it? Flat. She flatlined.
Yeah,
shit.
She totally yeah, did. Well.
But the problem is, like, her life isn't so miserable and nightmarish that she's like, gotta kill myself to talk, kill my real dead girlfriend. I'm like, this is a little extreme, like, because everybody's, like, cool with you. So it's not just, like a kill myself situation, unfortunately.
I mean, look, ghostbusting is her special interest, and she's not allowed to participate for at least 3 more years. So the world is ending.
Yeah.
Fair. I don't want to. I, as a person who scored 128 on the RADS test, doesn't want to assign that because I don't have an actual diagnosis. But. Phoebe is what I would call strongly autistic coded as a character.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, she's Egon's granddaughter. Yes. Who are we to say? Yeah. So, you know, trouble enough with social stuff as it is, and then everyone in her universe is mad at her about her trying to do the right thing. The only person who's nice to her is this nice ghost. I get it. I getcha. But yeah, she's like, I'll just hop out of my body for a couple minutes so we can really talk and really interact and stuff. And then Melody drops the, oh, by the way, I'm really sorry about this one. And, the orb possesses Phoebe's unspirited body.
Yep.
Because it needs a human voice to chant the ritual.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Does a real Bill Cipher honor.
Yeah. It's like, but he's powerful enough to open the gap between worlds so that I, as a ghost with unfinished business, can go see my family in the afterlife again. Which, hey, fair. Good motivation.
Hey, girl, your best friend's like a Ghostbuster. She's literally the best person to help you finish your unfinished business in the universe.
Oh, yeah.
This god, this Sumerian god that's like, I gotta freeze everything. Cold.
When your options are the girl who talks to ghosts and sort of understands where you're coming from, or the ancient god who doesn't understand the modern social constructs of family or peoplehood.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No. Hey, what, you want this, like, soft girl? You want a warlord? Like, come on. Pick up. You know. Figure it out.
I mean, hey, it was the best class in D&D 4th edition.
I've never played soft girl. Soft girl. No, that never. On our spell slots.
Nope. You listen, as a person that knows limited information about D&D, do not make me draw off a soft girl character sheet for
interview. They're called druids.
Fair enough. I don't know, every druid I've ever met is a hot ass, but oh man. The secret betrayal, of course. Garaka escapes from the orb and he's just the slender man but cold. And no tux. He's big, long, creepy guy, big bright eyes, and off he goes into New York. He gets his horns from the brass sex dungeon.
Yes.
Pops those back on.
After 10,000 years, I'm free. It's time to conquer Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the energy we want to see. And we get the always fun of, it's the middle of summer.
This
and
the beach Roland Emmerich over. Ass scene.
Thank you. I was early about this. Some Godzilla Independence
Day. Oh, yeah, 2012. Yeah. Remember that? Wonderful hit film.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Day After Tomorrow.
So we get like a lot of that. I love Day Zero After Tomorrow, death.
And I can't explain None. Why.
It,
yeah, well, yeah, no one died.
Well, because they ran from the code.
Right.
cold.
Yeah. They ran from the cold and the 12-foot-tall razor-sharp icicles sprouting up out of the ground every 3 feet.
Listen, New Yorkers are very agile.
Are they?
They're all like cats.
You got to remember that they're walking here. Every movie I've seen is
them getting hit by cars. That
they're walking here.
They're walking.
They say that a lot.
Oh my god!
I think this would be a really funny bit. Like this explains, clearly everyone shouldn't have survived, but there's a like rage in a certain subset of New Yorkers that just melts the ice around them.
I mean, the explanation for the ice in universe is not that he has actual ice powers, but it's like the cold of death, that instant you realize you can't do anything, you die, and it becomes physically cold around you. Yes. Like, yeah, if there's any set of people angry enough to not fall prey to an instant death via sorrow mechanic, it might be New Yorkers.
Nobody did the joke. Nobody did the only in New York. Nobody. I mean, I was waiting for it. And it didn't happen. It just left that right on the table.
Might not be hackneyed enough to be able to come back.
Maybe.
Give it a year or two, and there will be only a New York joke.
Yeah. But yeah, they realize he's coming for the containment unit because he wants a literal army of ghosts. And so they all armor up, as it were. They put on their overalls, they grab their proton packs, they realize that, hey, what kind of metallic alloy is a firehouse specifically full of? The answer is brass. There's no copper because they stripped all the wiring out of the walls years ago. But there is a brass fire pole that we can just saw part off of to melt all down and make into... Yeah, this is Matt's area of speciality. Hey, if I have like a little power generator thing that relies on copper coils, can I just dunk those in molten brass and be okay?
Tune in, it's brass hour. 1 hour on the clock. We're getting into it. So the brass that existed back when Garaka was like contained is not the brass that we have today. There's two like primordial brasses. There's Ashtaratu, which is called octoalloy, which has like gold, silver, copper, lead, zinc, tin, iron, mercury, like in it, which is really cool.
Wow.
Is like super, super old. And then there's this stuff called Panchaloha. I can never get the pronunciation right on that, which was more gold than anything else, but there's like a lot of copper in that was used in like a lot of Indian and Hindu stuff. That is sort of the oldest examples of brass that you have. And the difference that brass has between modern brass, if this gets too boring, please just fucking cut me off, is its melting and alloying point and its ability to be hot worked. Modern brass, like, I don't know, silicon brass, aluminum brass, brass is just copper and zinc with other shit. That's what modern brass is. But you get stuff like red brass, which is like the stuff that's used in gunmetal, that is like high copper, has a really high melting point, does not fuse to other things. You have something called Muntz metal, which is like an old naval brass that can be hot worked and stuff. But none of these, I mean, maybe the super old ones with like mercury in it can be just melted down. You dunk a thing and it's covered in brass. You have to do something called plating, which is like an entirely different chemical process. You don't even get the brass hot, you guys. You just put it in an acid solution and it just kind of attaches itself to something else. It
floats on
over. You apply an electrical charge.
I've done some plating in my time. Right. I know
also, the other thing that brass doesn't do is spark at all. And she's got this brass thing going in her proton pack, it's just throwing white sparks everywhere, which, like, that's the color of titanium burning. That's white. I don't know what obviously the metallurgy wasn't important here, but god damn it. There's a very select part of this audience that got up and left.
Hey, I'm enjoying myself. That was very informative. I didn't know about the octoalloy brass being literally eight metals thrown together.
And
that's cool.
And from my perspective, Matt, I enjoy the fact that you gave an Elden Ring lore style dissertation about the types of historically accurate brass that existed in the real world.
Yeah, I mean,
look, Matt's got opinions on alloyed gold. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's just gold, guys. Really good at what it does. Fire pole brass would most likely be
no shit about it.
Fire pole brass would most likely be cartridge brass, which is used for cartridge, or probably like a red brass, just for its durability. You could cut it up with a hacksaw. It's that soft. You can just cut right through that shit. Mm-hmm. I have worked on and fixed a couple of fire poles in my time. I work at it used to be a custom brass shop, and now we make everything, but it started as a custom brass shop. So I'd work with brass every day. And you can melt it with a propane, like a turkey deep fryer in a steel pot. You can totally do that. And sometimes casting brass is not hard to do, but getting it to stick to something by dunking it in there. No, I'm sorry. That's never going to work.
Yeah.
All right, back to our regular scheduled programming. Brass hour's over. You guys.
Yeah.
got what I got.
Wonderful. Yeah. Phoebe brasses up her proton pack specifically. No one else's. Doesn't have time. Nadim is here in his grandmother's suit of armor.
Yes.
And his highly powerful firebending abilities.
Yes.
Just like a firebender, need a source of flame, like from the firebenders from the M. Night Shyamalan movie, where they need a source of flame. Yep.
God. Don't remind me of that shit.
Cameron. Oh, you should inoculate yourself to that and watch a couple of people do reactions on YouTube to that movie in the year 2024. Because
maybe that would help.
It will help. It will soothe your wounds about that movie.
It turns out, hey, ancient god of death and negativity and ice, with all his powers restored, is very powerful. I do love the effect where he freezes the beam of quantum energy.
Yes.
That's really good.
Because he's trying to return everything to absolute zero, I'm like, that actually tracks. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Cold enough to freeze a beam of light.
Yeah, absolutely. It rules.
Super cool.
Which I wish it was explored more. I wish there was more interactions like this. I wish it wasn't just like him kind of gliding down streets and corridors or whatever. There's not enough. I mean, he was spooky, but not menacing. He just didn't set off his frozen dog minions, or there was never ground level stuff to tackle. You know, in the Ghostbusters movie, there were some people tackling the ground level threats, and then there was the rest of the core team was up fighting the big guy. They just didn't split it up like that. Even though they had 900 Ghostbusters by the end of this movie, all firing one proton
they
pack.
They did have a lot of Ghostbusters.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
I also think that one of the problems is that they didn't explore the cold powers come from hopelessness.
Yeah, I thought more people would be oh, this person's so brave, it's not affecting them. That would rule. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I'm not a movie writer.
If his thing is I make things colder as I make people sadder, then lean into that existential nightmare of this ghost god trying to make the entire city of New York completely and utterly miserable with his ghost army, which is what he wants. and explore that more, other than I shot icicles out of the ground and now it didn't pierce your lower jaw, you're still alive.
Yep, it's creepy guy.
That's one thing. Yeah, it's got real long.
It's one thing. Yeah, he's got those long.
Who was he a ghost fingers. Of? Or yeah. He just was he born a ghost? Were his parents ghosts?
Well, he's a demon, so this universe also has demon gods.
Yeah, yeah. He's like if Gozer was less androgynous.
Have the Ghostbusters ever grappled with the fact that they've never encountered an angel before, and that maybe we don't deserve to be in the kingdom of heaven at all, and that's why we're being plagued with ghosts?
They look like demons to you.
I mean, if Spangler Senior was still alive, that might actually be a joke that they would make in one of these movies.
I want to see a biblically accurate Slimer. Is kind of what I'm getting at here.
Might be less disgusting.
It would be less disgusting because it would have like a consistent form and shape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true.
Oh my god. This is the part of the film where we all fight the big bad guy. They all do their best, which isn't very good comparatively to the man who can drop it to absolute zero instantly. But Melody, having realized that this guy has no interest in actually opening the gap between worlds for her, comes in the last moment to help Nadim because she can literally light a flame with her match.
Oh right. Yep. Yeah.
And lets him get all that hot fire energy on him, which does work.
Yes. Blazing hot fire.
Blazing hot fire. Phoebe comes down with her brass alloy. Gets that delightful green beam of energy, which also does not get frozen because of the spiritual side of things rather than just the temperature side.
And that is
of things,
correct. When copper does get hot, it will produce green. So there you go.
They'll do a green.
Yes.
It is very pretty. It's my favorite experiment is throwing copper flakes.
Yeah. Remember those like cool lighters you could get in the early 2000s that had the chunk of copper where the fire came out and you could get just like green flame?
Yeah, I do because I bought one in Las Vegas.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
So I spent my entire time in Vegas constantly lighting that lighter. It
makes your cigarettes taste like pennies, but who cares, man?
yeah. The extreme cold cracks open the containment unit and let all the ghosts out.
Yep.
Goodbye, ghosts. But this also presents an opportunity because then they just throw this man through the floor into the containment unit, which then seals itself shut.
So now he's in there alone again. Yep. Yeah. He just got out of like an orb all by himself, and now he's in like a tube by himself.
Yeah, I imagine this one's a decent bit roomier because it contained like 30 years of New York ghosts.
Yeah, oh man, you know it smelled crazy in there.
Oh god.
So here is what I actually kind of like this because this is just a grown-up episode of the real Ghostbusters. Since the containment unit is a weird nightmarish pocket dimension, he could be like become like unbelievably powerful just by inhabiting
it's
that
his hyperbolic
space,
time
honestly.
Chamber like Goku just training.
I assume it's full of like leftover ghost energy from all the other inhabitants.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, that's actually like, oh, you've done,
that's a future problem.
Yeah, you've done a big bad by like actually see, like that brass ball was actually
yeah
the
it
best
really was
choice.
Yeah. Oh, for
we,
sure.
We need the like the what is it? The poison bag, that old like Japanese folklore thing where you put all these things in a bag and they all eat each other, and the thing that comes out is the poisonous.
Yes. Like
that, but yes, for the Ghostbusters, where it's just like one. Maybe they finally trap Slimer, and it just eats everything in there, and then it comes out, and it's like the ultimate big bag.
Man. That would be very good.
But also very sad because I really like the whole Slimer. Like, as a foil to the Ghostbusters, is like, yeah, it's just the embodiment of gluttony, but it's not dangerous.
It's
just
weird.
Gross.
Yeah, I love that the puppet's name was Onion Head. I love everything about that weird little thing. It's it's really good.
Yeah. It's a good puppet. Yeah, but yeah, you know they've saved the day. Because Melody started a fire to save lives instead of starting a fire and accidentally killing her whole family, the unfinished business is completed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, says her goodbyes to Phoebe and floats off to the afterlife. Goodbye, queer content. We hardly knew ye.
Speaking of Avatar, my girlfriend just came to the moon.
This too is Yuri.
There's nose.
That's rough, buddy.
That's rough.
And, you know, the city thaws. The Ghostbusters are hailed as heroes. Walton Peck comes to shut them down and is peer pressured into showing his support for them because, of course,
mm-hmm.
yeah, couldn't have done it without your help.
It's literally just like, motherfucker, you know that ghosts are real. Now the entire city knows that ghosts are real. We stopped ghosts. Why the fuck are you trying to shut us down?
This is the easiest election popularity boost you could ever get, is I support the people who get the things that go bump in the night in your back alley and or house.
I'm like, even the mayor whose name I forget from the first two movies knew that about the Ghostbusters. Yeah, seriously.
People love Ghostbusters. Buster makes them feel good.
As a mayor, especially New York City mayor, you're supposed to love the cops to a level that everyone really questions your sanity. So, what are Ghostbusters but ghost cops? This mayor has, you know,
yeah,
come on.
I mean, I respect Ghostbusters more than I respect cops.
Well, they've never killed anyone because everyone on the target is already dead. True.
Yeah.
And the things that they incarcerate are detrimental to human life, so.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's not like Slimer's only crime is loitering.
Right. I mean, if we get a Ghostbusters movie in like 30 years where there's a ton of Ghostbusters and they have a really corrupt union, and yeah.
Yeah, and one of them dies, but they trap his soul and put it in a robot body, and they say, you can still do work as the robo-ghost cop.
Yeah. it's like TNG Star Trek to modern-day Star Trek.
I didn't get like a police academy, but it's Ghostbusters. Wow. All right, I'm making myself sad. Don't do this. Please don't do this.
Turn the body cam off before you sprinkle the ectoplasm on the vehicle.
Ghostbusters 2499. He gets inside
who's a ghost and who's not. Like, no, I'm not. Yeah. You look like a ghost to me, kid.
Peter says that you're like 80% ghost. I don't know.
Family Guy holding up the color grader, but it just goes more and more green and ethereal as it goes up.
I'm Irish, I swear. Says you're a ghost, according to this.
It goes from translucent to opaque.
Oh my god. But yeah, the movie was actually quite fun. I quite enjoyed it. I do agree we could have had more like minor ghost action around, but it was not a bad ghost.
The nostalgia buttons were.
The
buttons were a little much when it came to like saying the iconic lines and whatever, but what I really, really appreciated and that I didn't really think about until the end of the movie was this score. Was this kind of like that like doofy like clarinets like as it like pans over a scene of New York City that was like kind of the same soundtrack that was in the original Ghostbusters movies. That they just kind of seamlessly integrated into a modern film. And I was like, man, remember when like scores were good and lighthearted and kind of like set tones and weren't just Hans Zimmer sitting on a keyboard?
Hey, Matt, I do remember that because I grew up in the 90s where that's all that scores were.
But like, I really like when it comes to nostalgia in a film, I'm really kind of. I'm not the biggest fan of that stuff, but the score like brought me right back. Yeah. Mm. So points for that too. Absolutely.
It was quite nice. Yeah. Go watch the movie if you were interested in Ghostbusters. I will also say Afterlife is fine, if definitely for a slightly younger audience, but I still enjoyed it. These new Ghostbuster films aren't bad. I'm glad that they are not actively awful.
Yes.
Until next time, hey, remember, Buster makes us all feel good.
Well, what I was, I'm gonna take that that frost god and use him to distill my crystal head vodka.
How dark and horny, as Bill Murray says in all of the trailers. Wearing sunglasses for some reason, we don't know where he got them, and we don't know why he's wearing them. They just showed up on his face in one scene.
I think they might be there were to his some face. Yeah,
there's some editing in this movie that we probably could have discussed, but that whatever. I'm sure there was a lot more in this movie we didn't get to see, but that's all right. We'll wait for the extended edition.
It's always the case. You guys know where to find us. Various places online. We have no idea what we're covering next week, so we'll figure that out.
Yeah, folks.
But thank you for listening. And goodbye, everybody.
Until next time.
Monster Dear Monster is brought to you by Fireheart Media. If you enjoyed the show, please share this and all of our episodes with friends. And remember to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. Word of mouth is the only way we grow. If you like, you can also kick us a few bucks to help us keep the lights on at ko-fi.com/Fireheart Media. Check out our other show, Jolichon's Place, at www.jolichon.place.